Welcome to Midnight in the Marshaverse. This is the Marshaverse. I'm Marsha, and it's midnight. So come on in and chill. And if you had a hard day, this is the time of day when you get to relax. And we like to do it around here with a little cannabis and cognac. And that's how we take the edge off the day once a week. Just this once a week, we just take the edge off the day, chill out, and have some conversation and a little fun. And so tonight's cannabis is going to be a little different. We're not smoking this week. This week, we are eating Hail Mary caramel-filled chocolate-dipped pretzel bites. It was a birthday present, and so I'm going to have it tonight. And for cognac, we're going back to the cognac, the official cognac of Black people, Hennessy, but this is Hennessy Black. And they say it's designed for to be mixed, and I don't usually play that. I don't like to cut my shit. I like my, I like the P-Funk. But tonight, we're going to mix it, and so we're going to have a little Hennessy Black. And a little coffee, because it's late at night, and so it's nice to be alert when you've been eating edibles. Okay, I'm pouring this into my sherry cup. I like my cups that I get, you know, they give you free stuff when you go on their shows, and so I got a sherry cup. And sherry, I am so grateful to, you know, when I came back in the show business, and nobody had to do nothing for me, but the way I was embraced by my sisters in comedy, and I cannot thank them all enough, and especially Sherry. She had me on her show, and she dedicated a whole dressing room to me. Are you kidding me? I was blown away. I haven't yet found the words to express how honored and just, I totally did not expect anything like that. And so it was, it's quite an honor, and I'm happy. You probably can't see it, but that's my sherry cup. And I'll show it to you in the close up later. Anyway, so we got our let me see what it tastes like. Pretty tasty right there. And this is the little brownie bite thing, and I'm gonna eat that in a minute. But right now we're gonna talk about my comediosophy. Incorporates and encompasses all elements of my comedy and my philosophy about it. And I put on my social media one day this week a picture from Night Court, a picture of myself. And I said, believe it or not, this is one of the happiest moments of my life. And I said I would explain it tonight on this show. So I will. It was one of the happiest moments of my life. It was my birthday week, and I got to spend it on the set of Night Court. I was shooting the episode where Roz gets married that week. And since it's the end of Pride, we're out of Pride, and we just wrap that up. We're going to talk about the things that were special for me last month. And Night Court, first of all, being my birthday, and when I got on the set for that week, they had roses in my dressing room. They had 70 roses. It was, I mean, I counted each and every one, 70, perfect, all the same color, beautiful, beautiful bouquet. I was blown away. And then later on in the week, on my actual birthday, they gave me a cake and sang happy birthday. And John said nice words that he usually don't say. And everybody was just really, really special and sweet. And it was an episode where Roz got married. And, you know, for somebody who didn't come out until she was in her 60s, the progress and the things that have happened are so, so profound. And I don't know that people really pay attention to it. But for a character on a national sitcom to get married, to be gay, to come out on TV as a lesbian, without that being what the show is about, without that being an issue, without that being the joke, I was so, again, honored when I read the script. I'm like, wow, they have really been gentle with me and given me really, really important things to say and do and represent. And so I was very happy to do that show and to have John Larroquette walk me down the aisle. That was special. And they gave me a beautiful wife who's almost as beautiful as my real wife, my work wife. I have two beautiful wives. Very few people can say that. I'm very proud of that. And that also in the last month, Outstanding, the Netflix documentary about the standout show we did at the Greek Theater before the strike, that came out, and I'm featured in that. And again, I'm so honored. And mainly because all of the people in it, they did the heavy lifting. They came out, they did the work, they fought the fight. I didn't. I was closeted. I was not gay. I was in the closet with the glass door. And so by the time I came back to do stand-up, the doors had been open wide, and it was much, much easier for me to come out than many of them. And so I'm so honored that they included me in that number. And to stand there that night was really kind of special. And I'm very happy to have been a part of that show.
Are you all ready to make history?
Can we hear it for this incredible historic cast?
Comedy's the one thing getting in there saying, we can all laugh at this.
I'm snoring now. How do I know? Because my wife records it.
All kinds of comedy is accepted now. I never thought would be possible in my lifetime.
I love being in a room full of 50 people and somebody just beelines past 49 people and is like, hey, what are your pronouns?
When I was a young comic, you had to be careful what you did and who you talked to and who knew.
It wasn't accepted to say you were gay on stage.
There was a time where comedy was very accepting of homophobia.
When I first started doing comedy, I thought that I might be a stand-up, but I discovered very early on that that was not possible.
Many of the other comics would tell me to stop talking about gay stuff.
Next time someone says to you, you choose to be a lesbian, say, no, 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 I was chosen.
Every word is a bullet. And you are a loaded weapon, and everything you say can find a target that doesn't really want to hear that.
And also, this Pride month, I think it's time, or again, to revisit the fact that, like I said, I came out in my 60s. And again, my sisters in comedy were right there. They made that happen. And Kim Whitley, that's my girl. Kim was doing a show, and a show where she was honoring the people who inspired her. And somehow my name came up and I was like, really? Okay, me, you want to honor me? Yeah, right. With the fourth person out of the five you already had drop out or something. But anyway, I said, okay. And I did it. But she said she was going to do a 40s theme. And it bothered me because I hadn't come out to her. I hadn't said anything to her. Or anybody. And I called her and I said, I don't want to wear a dress. I can't wear it. If I'm going to come out, if I'm going to do this, if it's going to be my first appearance, I don't want to wear a dress. I don't care what you wear. Wear what you want. Get with wardrobe. You decide what you're going to wear. And that night, I finally came out as my upper ghetto lesbian self. And I had the good fortune, one of the people that Kim was honoring was Jane Kennedy. And I just fangirled all over Jane Kennedy. I have had the biggest crush on her since 1971 when I saw her butt come down the steps in Lady Sings the Blues on Billy Dee Williams' arm. I wanted to know who that was. And so when I saw her, I had to tell her that, and I did. And she was very nice. And at the dinner that we attended, she sat next to me and was my de facto date. And so I had a great time. That was a great evening for me, and I will always remember that. And so Pride, like I said, wrapping it up for this year. It never ends because you should always be proud and not just of any one aspect. I'm proud of all that I am. But to be able to sit here and say this and not feel any guilt, shame, whatever, trepidation, fear, is quite a lot of progress. And I think it's probably time to have a drink to that. Is this the time where I tell you what or who's bringing you this illustrious show? Okay. Midnight in the Marshverse is brought to you by Aunt Karen's Cheesy Wheezy Beanie Weenie Hot Damn Burger Dog and Lima Bean Casserole in a Can. Just add Brussels sprouts and Aunt Karen's signature hot damn burgers made with store brand hot dogs, minced, suburban seasoned, and shaped into patties. Delicious as a sandwich slathered with cheese whiz and mayo, or as the bottom layer of this delicious all-American lasagna, hot dish that you'll be proud to serve your family any day of the week. And remember, Aunt Karen's foods are specifically engineered to have the shelf life of forever, so you can enjoy them any time of the day, night, or year. And because you boil and serve them straight out of the can, they're perfect for a lunch, dinner, or neighborhood watch. At 10 for a dollar, you'll have enough left over for Aunt Karen's delicious ice cube tray homemade ice cream in a can powder. On sale now at a big box store near you. Remember, Aunt Karen's Suburban Seasonings line of soccer mom meals are so good, you might have to call the police on yourself. Uh-oh, look who's here. Wait a minute. George Wallace.
Come George. On and make me jump. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon.
Hi, Hattie. Hi, how you doing? What you doing up this time of night?
I'm always up. I never go to bed before 3:30, 4 o'clock.
Okay, well, I'm going to call you then. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to one of my oldest friends in comedy. I've known him since he was
me, I'm
a boy.
Me, I'm your grasshopper. And
we're going to be working together this weekend, July 5th and 6th in Philadelphia at the Helium Comedy Club. But tonight, he's here. Please say hello to my good friend, George Wallace. Hi, George.
Good morning, everybody. It's so good to be with you, Marsha. I love your T-shirt. I was just reading about the story. Do you ever boast about being in the 70s? I started asking you, do you remember the 70s when disco came out? It was such a wonderful time. I think that's my best era of life, the 70s and the 80s.
It was wonderful. And the first ladies of disco, this show, I have the good fortune to be involved with and to open for them. This is the best show ever. This is the most fun show I've ever seen. People are up dancing, singing. People who come in on crutches and walkers, they're jumping up and down and singing. And Martha Wash, who doesn't get nearly enough credit, Martha Wash is the first lady, and all of her sisters, Linda Clifford and Norma Jean Wright from Chic. They put on a show. It's amazing. And so we're going to be doing one in September.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Whenever they want me to. It's that much fun. And like I said, and Martha Wash is such a hero to me. When the business tried to bend her over and screw her out of her money by
royalties, yeah,
having her sing the actual songs, but then hiring somebody else to perform them and not paying her for those performances. And she took them on and she finally got, you know, her due. And now everybody benefits because she stood up. And so
that's good.
Was it
the Two Tons of Fun, Marsha, or something like that?
You know, she started with Sylvester.
Sylvester was so good. Woo!
Mm-hmm. And then the Two Tons of Fun. And then she went out on her own. And my favorite record song ever is her and Luther Vandross singing I Who Have Nothing. That is, I mean, those two singers, they sang. Just the artistry of the two of them is just wonderful to listen to.
Listen to you. You lit up when I mentioned that disco era.
I am a music lover. We add a playlist to the shows. My stand-up show, we have music. I was born in doo-wop. I grew up in Motown, through disco, all the way up through the Quiet Storm and here into the hip-hop and everything. So I am just celebrating our music and contributions, jazz, blues, all of it. I love all of it. But anyway, tell me something good. Tell the people how I met you.
Well, when I first drove across country, we had driven from New York City to Los Angeles, and we pulled up to the world-famous Comedy Store. And when I pulled up, I pulled right up in a brand new Lincoln, and all my black comedian, I didn't even know them yet. They were looking at me like I was some kind of crazy fool. Who the hell was I? Because it was a brand new car.
He's not telling everything. First of all, it was purple.
It was pink.
It was a purple Lincoln.
Yeah.
Brand new purple Lincoln. He pulls up in front of the Comedy Store. None of us had enough money for bus fare. We was walking and begging. I would be so hungry, and I would stop the women coming out the club and ask them if they had food in their purse. Because women always have food in their purse. If anybody got food, it's some woman. So I was at pull up. She had a big purse. I'm like, you got any food in your purse? Give it to me.
You were that broke, Marsha? You were that broke at that time?
Of course. And so here comes George in this purple Lincoln, and he gets out and he got on purple pants and a purple body shirt, t-shirt. And he's 6 foot, how tall are you?
I was 6'5" then, I'm 6'4".
Okay, he's 6'5", buff, in this little tank truck, walking around, like, and got a car, a new car. He was everybody's best friend after that.
I sure was. No, I may have had the platform shoes too, Marsha. I may have had the platform shoes because that was still part of the 70s, you know, in the disco era.
1976.
Yeah.
And get in the car. Every time you got in the car with George, he said the same thing. I see y'all La Silla, nigga. Every time we got to La Silla, La Silla, nigga. So
that's the first joke I did in Los Angeles, and I wanted y'all to be proud of me, you know?
Now, we were proud of you, and we were very grateful for you. And I'm grateful because I talked about my sisters in the business. I didn't talk about my brother. You know, my brothers have been there, too. And I came up as one of the boys. I came up as you got balls. And so I've always been around men. And a lot of people have negative memories and all that. But they always treated me as a sister, you know, as somebody to... they gave me tips. They gave me jokes. They gave me rides. They were always there for me.
Well, look at the industry you came into. You came into a men's industry, which is still today. And the toughest job in the world, I think, is being a comedian. But being a female comedian and being Black, oh, come on. And making it, oh, my goodness.
Well, I had, you know, remember Cheryl?
Well, you had Shirley, but that was still, okay, you and Shirley, come on. That's two out of how many?
Well, there was Brenda Verrett and Roberta Perrell. They were both doing stand-up. But, you know, there weren't very many of us. But the point is, you know, comedians are competitive. And a lot of guys are like, they don't want to deal with women. They don't want to talk to women. You know, as many people as you can get out of your circle, you can feel better about yourself. So, yeah, women aren't funny. I never really had to face that, though. I was always accepted as being qualified to run with the boys.
And you know what that means? That means you were prepared and you held your own and you could stand up with anybody. You can, you know, you were ahead of all most of the guys. Come on.
I just was, you know, too stupid to quit. So we're going to
Philadelphia.
Well,
we're going to Hillian's Comedy Club this weekend, and we're going to have a good time. I think it's going to be hot, but not as hot as where we are right now. We're going away to get a vacation. Yeah.
No, but it's supposed to be their highest temperature is less than it was outside here in Vegas.
Yeah.
Because it's still about 90 here, and they only getting up to 85, 90, something like that.
Yeah, it's going
to
be 100 degrees. The low is going to be 100 in the next 4 or 5 days for the next week. And I tell you what, I just found out I'm not going to go to hell. I can't go to hell. Because if hell is hotter than this, that's not going to work out for me.
No.
Not gonna work.
Well, yeah, but you could just, I'm sure, just say, I know, sir, I don't want to go. But I tell people about the weather here. I said, don't ask people what the weather is. Why do they have weather on TV? Why is it just, it's hot as fuck.
It's hot as fuck, that's it? Hot as fuck.
Just like yesterday, just like tomorrow. Hot as fuck.
Hot as fuck mean grilling. You want a barbecue, you need no coal, you need no gas. Just stick your meat out of the window.
You remember when we was kids and everybody would try to fry an egg on the sidewalk? Did you ever do that?
And then get I heard about it, but I never did it.
Because your mom was like, what you doing with my eggs? No, you ain't taking my eggs out.
I know you ain't taking my eggs out of here. I ain't got but three.
Well, George, I am so happy you stopped by. I appreciate you. Welcome to state. But, you know, I know it's past your bedtime.
It is not past my bedtime. I am a night person. Since I met you, all of us are basically all comedians are night people. Because we started working, we didn't get off stage. That was in California. The club didn't close to 2, and then we went to eat and got home maybe 4 or 5. And that was the standard.
Where did we go eat?
I remember many times taking your ass, your greedy ass. You love that fat burger. Oh, my God.
Fat Burgers was some good shit.
It was the burger back in the day. And how many people could get in there? They had about 50 people in the place.
No, only somebody get in there. It was like 4 people that could get in. People. You had to stand outside and holler. And you had to have the technique. You had to holler as you was, I want a double fat burger with cheese.
It was a. It was amazing. They had it down, and it was really good. And you walked away feeling good. I got me a fat burger. Really good. We went to the Cock and the Bull in Los Angeles. We went to the Parks Bagel. I can't think of the name of the place on Santa Monica Boulevard. Everybody would go to after.
The Cantor's 9 out of 10 times. Cantor's.
No, I hated Cantor's. That's still nasty, just like it was then. It's nasty today, Marcia. Cantor's. I don't like it. Rodney Dangerfield used to walk in a robe, almost naked, late at night.
Rodney Dangerfield used to order like 2 pieces of bread and 2 slices of
bologna.
And then ask if they had any mustard packs.
And then he would ask you, do you have any change? Because he didn't want to break a dollar. I need 25 cents and I don't want to break a dollar, you know?
Did you ever meet Henny Young?
Henry Youngman at the place out on Jan Smith's place. What was that called? But I did meet him with the violin playing one night.
Well, with girls, he would walk up to you and go, you want a diamond pin? And you go, yeah. And then he'd give you a safety pin with a dime stuck to it.
I was talking about you've met a lot of people in your life, and I knew Richard a few times, but I didn't get to work with him because I wasn't out there when you guys produced the show. I really hated that moment that I didn't get to work with you guys because I know I would have been in there.
Yeah.
I think Mooney put all the blacks in there, did he not?
Mooney put everybody in there. That was the first time Robin Williams was on TV, was on the Richard Pryor show.
Really?
For the first time Argus Hamilton was on the Richard Pryor show. And so everybody, you know, got a chance to work. Who was around at that time? Got our union cards. We all got, to actually walk on the NBC lot.
Right.
Talk to us like we was real comedians.
To park on that lot, huh? That was amazing.
Park. Get off the bus and walk.
Is there anybody in show business that you did not get a chance to work with that you love, that you wish you had a chance to work with?
Oh, yeah. Moms. Oh, not only did I want to work with moms, I said this on Outstanding, I would love to have hung out with moms and Gladys Bentley, who's back here on the wall, and who are out lesbians in Harlem during the Renaissance. I would love, if I could go back to any point in time, I would be zooted down. I would be the hat broke down. I would walk in like a player's ball.
I worked with a lady. She worked for me in Las Vegas, and I happened to be with her Saturday at Norman Lear's memorial service. The lady that freaked me out, not freaked me out, I'm so happy and elated to know her in my life. Marla Gibbs, just, you know, there's certain people it's just amazing that you got to talk to her and know her. Roxy, what's her name? Roxy, the other lady? She's the same thing to me, but Florence, I still call her Florence. Marla Gibbs, what a lady.
Marla's amazing, and to have the chance to work her memory lane. And I used to just go there to eat, you know, it had good soul food, and you could just sit and chill. And it was very upper ghetto, which I love.
It was jazzy, wasn't it?
It was jazz, but when I say upper ghetto, I mean it was nice stuff in the hood. That was just well done, wonderful eating out with our culture represented. So
jazz is uppity.
Jazz is the best audience for comedians. Jazz audiences.
Say that again? Say that one more time.
Jazz audiences are the best audiences for comedians.
Marsha Walfield, if you ever get a chance, you need to work the Dave Koz cruise.
I would love to.
The best audience you've ever seen in your life. These uppity jazz people.
Upper ghetto. They black. Because, you know, in the black community, we don't get classes like everybody else. Everybody live together. So, everybody's in the hood. So you got upper ghetto people. They live around the corner from the middle ghetto people, from the low ghetto. And they all in your family. No matter where you live. So whenever you get together, it's going to be all the ghettos in the house. And usually it's going to be a fight because you always come over here.
What's great about the Dave Koz audience is that a quarter is gay, a quarter is black, a quarter is white, and a quarter is that W thing, the LGBTQ, whatever. Well, I'm trying to reach, these people love, let me tell you something, this is the best audience I've ever worked for in my life. And I just said, we cried, we had gospel on the ship, we had everything. It was just awesome. And you know how great the Tom Joyner Morning Show cruise is. It was on par.
Well, I had never done the Joyner cruise until last year, and I had a ball. But put a word in for me. You know, they respect you. tell them I'm available.
Well, hell, it's well, I'm glad you got to work for that jazzy crowd, because it's anytime you get to work in front of, I work with the guy Kenny G. George Benson was the second group guy I worked with for a long time. That was a great audience too. And some great people. I've been so blessed. Some of the people I met.
It was George Duke. At the Roxy back in 1977.
That was our first job, wasn't it, Marshall, to get up at the Roxy?
One of the first ones. Yeah.
I think I went on with Lenny Kravitz back in the day.
And the Troubadour. And it was another one that if you got a chance to work there, you was really in the business.
The Troubadour. Yeah, I do. I worked there. I don't remember. Maybe it was just Comedy Night. But it was really good. Those little clubs like that. That was
and Ye Little Club.
Ye Little Club was Joan Rivers, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Mooney reigned over there. She loved him. And so he had free reign over him and Sandra Bernhardt.
Well, they were running partners back in the day, yeah.
Back in the day, I remember all that. And we had a lot of stories. We have to come back again and let us... reminisce. I was thinking the other day, I'm like, you know, people talk about do stuff make you reminisce. I'm like, everything make me reminisce. That's what I do most of the day. Just reminisce.
Here's what I want to do. Here's what we're going to do. One night you're in town. No, you live in Las Vegas. If you ever get to Los Angeles, I frequently go over to the Comedy Store and I follow August all the time.
Okay.
So we should put one of those shows together.
All right.
Marsha, let me show you how stupid I am. Asking me, you, Argus, John Witherspoon.
No. We have to get Arsenio to fill in for.
Yeah, we get Arsenio to fill in for me. And then get the toilet paper and wipe in it, you know.
Arsenio was around back then.
Is there any more? There's a few people, right? There's a few people around.
Yeah.
But not many.
No, it's a pretty exclusive club, you know.
Yeah.
Knockwood, but. You know, I'm glad, and it's nice to be able to look across the TV screen and see an old friend and be able to look past the years and still see that young man in the purple pants with the purple shirt.
Well, that's who I was in the day. That was disco era, and it was nothing but fun, and I loved it, and I wish I could do it again today.
Well, at least we can tell them about it. You know, my thing is we have stories. And we have stories to tell, and they're all consequential. And so I appreciate you being here, and I'm extending the offer that you can come anytime. We can chew the shit, talk about stuff, and I'd love to have you. Thank you.
Anytime you have an open spot, you can always call on me. I love to talk, and I don't know a lot of people, believe it or not.
Get out.
People don't believe that, Marshall.
George got a picture with the Pope. I bet you, don't you?
Not this one, but the
left. George know everybody. Don't pay no attention to him.
But Marshall, is when I know them, I've met them, I have an acquaintance, but I don't really know a lot of them. None of us do, really, you know. But
yeah, well.
Anytime you somebody fall out, anything like that, I'm here, always. Don't ever put that.
Expect a call. And call in anytime you want to.
Okay.
I'll see you on Friday for two shows at Helium Comedy Club in Philly.
If you get those two right, we'll do another two on Saturday.
We're going to do two more the next day. And each one is going to be better. So y'all get your tickets because you don't want to be outside going. But I thought I could get them. No, get them now. So
you've got to come see the great Marshall Waterfall. And by the way, if you know somebody that lives in Philadelphia, or even close, you better give them a call.
All right. Come on, bring the whole family. Bring your ma, your pa, and brother James Brown. Thank you, George. Love you, buddy.
Thank you so much. I love you, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
It's the time of the week I look forward to the most. The time I get to introduce to you my sons, my comedy sons. I love them dearly. And first, I'd like to introduce my oldest son, the responsible one. He thinks he's Jesus, but we look past that. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to Stephen Roberts.
What was that? That conversation was amazing.
You like that?
What a great, great treat that was. That was so great. I love to hear you talk about coming up in comedy, and I love it when I get to hear you talk with other comedians from your past. It's just amazing. It's just amazing.
I enjoyed that. Yeah. So, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm Brad Garrett's this week, so I'm running 1,000 miles an hour, but I'm doing well.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Should we bring your brother out?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Let's introduce my youngest son, my problem child, my uncle upstairs. I love him so much. It's hard to explain. Please welcome Skills Hudson.
Yay.
Hey, baby. Hey. What you doing?
Hey, yo.
What you drinking?
I'm drinking that Tuesday night special.
Now, come on, you're gonna do for that what Snoop did for gin and juice. What is it?
Huh?
What is that?
Oh, I call this dimples.
And what is it?
Oh, it's vodka and Gatorade.
Yes.
What flavor of Gatorade?
Oh, I mixed it with orange and blue.
Orange and blue?
Yeah.
I tell you what, put it on a snow cone. That'll be really good. Okay.
No, I don't do snow cones no more. I'm grown, man.
So
you're drinking Gatorade
and yeah, vodka. You're drinking Gatorade and vodka.
But you're grown.
But you're grown. Right. Okay. What you smoking on?
Oh, some sativa Reba.
Any particular strain or you don't care?
Oh, you know what? I don't even know the strand of it, but it's 21%.
Okay.
Well, I know you would give me props on that because you know I usually stay under 20%.
Yeah, no, I would give you 30% and just watch you freak out. Anyway, tonight we're going to things on my social media. One of the things I posted, I woke up one morning the other morning to a video of a man who went into a daycare and raised hell because his son was playing dress up and he had on a skirt, had on a dress. And the man turned the place out. He's like, don't ever put my son in a dress. Rah, 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 rah. And it made me ask the question. First of all, I thought the whole homophobic incident in front of children was way over the top. But it made me ask the question, why? Why? What's so wrong with boys playing dress up? Why is everybody so up in arms about boys in a dress?
Well, you and I both know that there's nothing wrong with boys playing dress up, whether it be girls or boys' clothes. And we also know that we're in an era right now where asking what are boys' clothes and what are girls' clothes and why do we have a delineation between the two. But I would give a short answer. The reason why he did that is just very, very simple. It's fear. Now, I don't know what he's afraid of necessarily, although I have a good idea. And I think that most of the time, what we're afraid of is something we've already experienced, you know, or something that we are curious about more than we like others to know. I mean, how many politicians have we seen who have said, oh, gay people and homosexuality is a horrible sin and it's a bad thing. And then we find out later they've been fucking a meth head in their car on Tuesdays, right. every Tuesday for a year. I mean, so that I'm going to say that this man is projecting on his son what he feels about himself and saw his son in a dress and went, oh my God, my son likes wearing dresses too. There can't be two of us. They're all going to find me out if they see him in a dress. I guarantee you that it's somewhere in that ballpark, somewhere. And he's afraid everybody's going to know about him.
Okay. Skills.
But look, what I was looking at it was at the kid, right? And I felt bad for him because, and the kid, just all the kids, you know, how he, you know, made a big thing of the little boy just having on a dress. And it brought back a memory of mine. I think I want to say I was maybe 15, and it was on Halloween, right? And I dressed up as a woman. I had my mother clothes on. I had her little rabbit coat. I had a little skirt, and I was jumping the gate, and I remember the man that stayed next door that worked on our cars, he called out my mom's name. He was like, Frankie. And I turned around. He was like, oh, shit, boy, what's wrong with you? I was like, it's Halloween. He was like, you got no other costumes? You can. And I remember, you know what I'm saying, when I seen that with that of how I felt like at that time, like, was I doing something wrong? You know what I'm saying? I was, you know, like I was dressing up, and, you know, playing dress up. I didn't, and I was 14 at the time, 14 right, or 15.
Were you wearing a wig? Were you wearing Barbara?
I had a wig. Yeah, I had my grandmother's wig on.
What was its name? What was the name of the wig?
Let me ask the question. You are not gay.
No. Correct? No.
You have no homosexual tendency or late homosexual desires.
No, I don't.
So you were just playing.
Yeah, I was. That's what I was doing. And I had did it before with my sisters and stuff. You know what I'm saying? So on Halloween, it was nothing for me to, and my grandmother, when I went upstairs and asked her for a wig, and my mother, it was no problem. You know what I'm saying? I put it on and left out. I'm jumping the gate. And I'm like, Frankie, what you doing jumping the gate? I turned around.
Go ahead. You know, why are you jumping the gate? What if you live there?
No. He thought it was my mom. And
but
thought
why
I was
you jumping the gate if you live there?
No, I was leaving. I was leaving, going to school.
And you couldn't get out the gate?
No, I was jumping at the back gate. I always jumped up. That's what I did. I always jumped the back gate.
Okay, you was going through the alley.
Yeah, going through the alley.
Okay.
Yeah.
Only in Chicago do you go through the alley and jump the back gate to get to the alley.
Yeah, and he was right next door on his car. He was like, hey, Frankie.
Yeah, people be in the alley all time of the day and night, but y'all don't understand about Chicago. People do shit in the alley in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
They put lights in them so that you can see up and down the alley, you know. And
we played basketball in the alleys on crates.
Baseball. You played all kinds of stuff in the alley. You pitched pennies in the alley. So,
oh, yeah.
And in the gangway, the alleys and gangways was like Dungeons and Dragons. You go from your places to and you could hide and run back around. It was part of the whole.
What's a gangway? What's a gangway?
The space between two buildings, usually as steps going down the far end and down the front end. And they're between two usually apartment buildings. And it's a narrow little walkway from the street to the alley.
Oh, okay.
And it's good to run through that when you're trying to get away from somebody.
They're really good for getting out of the rain and for grinding on other adolescents.
Oh, yeah. That and running away from
I believe she was. Okay.
Oh, yeah, I forget.
So now, what do we do? Do we have 2 minute rant? I have a 2 minute rant. I'm ready to give my 2 minute rant.
Oh, let's hear it. Yeah, go for it.
2 minute rant. Joe Biden is getting a lot of shit for being having a bad debate. He stuttered, he stumbled, and everybody's focusing on his performance, but nobody's paying attention to the fact that the man next to him was lying his ass off, he's a lying, pussy-grabbing felon, and he was, any of us standing on that stage, listening to that man next to us spout the nonsense he was spouting, would have left us all dumbfounded and without ability to respond coherently, because all you could think, what the fuck did you just say? What? Y'all ain't gonna say nothing about what he just said. Yeah, okay, but where was I? I don't know. I can't think. Of course he couldn't think, because the fuck did he just say? Now, that aside, the whole hand-wringing thing, even if Joe Biden is totally incoherent and is bedridden and doing the old, what was it? SCTV Perry Como impression, where he comes out laying out and he's so relaxed. It just even if Joe Biden had to be pushed out in a stretcher to just sit there and drool, the Democratic ticket is a Democratic ticket. He is a leader enough to have chosen someone as his second, as his running mate, fully capable of taking over should he stumble, should the worst happen. There is no reason to panic whatsoever. In fact, it's something to celebrate. You have Kamala in the background, and not only is she ready, she is back there going, did y'all call me yet? Did anybody say anything about me? It's my turn, because I'm ready to go. And so when you have Joe Biden and Kamala,
time is up.
Even if he is, there is no reason to panic, consider, or think twice. That's my 2 minutes.
Dude, Trump, you know what I'm saying, has got immunity and for everything now. You know what I'm saying? It was already the visual side of, like, from his supporters, they in their mind, they was giving him immunity. With anything that would happen, they would just say, oh, well, just sweep it under the rug. Now the Supreme Court don't came out and said, hey, you know, if the president do some shit, it's just an act. It was an act. It was an act that they did, and so it should be okay. And it's like you were just saying, the logic says for us to vote Democratic, not even can't, just like me. I have a speech impediment and stutter. He older than me, and he just have a speech impediment, and he's older, and you know what I'm saying? He up there, he was, when he was getting the stuff out, he was getting it out, it was coherent, but it was just, when it was, you know, he got a speech impediment, he older, you know what I'm saying? Dude was over that line, like you said, and then they compound that with saying that, okay, he immune to it. So now that's just a general What's the word I'm looking for? Help me out, y'all.
I'm done. I don't know, baby.
Invigorate his people. I don't know why, like, I stuck my fist up his ass right there.
That'll invigorate you. That'll
take me up out of a deep sleep, I'm pretty sure.
But that made his people feel like even more, okay, yeah. Why did don't put that light up, man? I feel like the aliens coming or something.
No,
there you go.
It's the lima bean in him. Anyway,
you're just so on point.
What did you call
me? I wanted more seconds.
Wait, hold on. What did you call me?
Think you can't help it.
I'm calling the police. Excuse me.
Uncle Karen is about to call the police on this. Steven, my love.
Yes.
Uncle Kurt.
My love. Your 2-minute rant, I can't wait.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about one of the most offensive, horrible, bad things that one could ever do, and that is not put your shopping cart in the shopping cart return receptacle in the parking lot. What the fuck? Why would you make somebody else put your cart away? You use the cart, you should put it away. How come when I see a spot, it's really close to the entrance of the store, I'm going to park there? No, I can't, because there's a fucking shopping cart right in the middle. So you know what I'm doing now? I'm just pushing that grocery cart right into the car on the other side of the parking space. I'll just, listen, they got a BMW. They can afford this. I'll just smash it right into there. I don't fucking care anymore. You bring your groceries, you put them in your trunk, and then you're telling me you look to your right and there's two open spaces, parking spaces, and you look to their left and four spaces down is the cart return, and you can't just walk four more spaces down and put your goddamn basket in the basket area? Why? Why can't you do that? Why?
I do that.
Thank you.
I know you. I'm sure you do that.
I understand in a Michael Douglas in Falling Down kind of way. I understand exactly.
Yes, Uncle Kurt.
Let's start, we're going to start packing up your things, boys and girls. All right, it's almost time to go.
Okay.
Yes, have a little more of your Gatorade with your vodka, Billy. And we've got a question from the box.
Oh, yay! Here we go.
I haven't seen this. I just pulled it out, set it aside. I don't know what it says. Now it says, what's something you think is more challenging for you than it is for other people you know?
To not complain about people not putting their shit where it belongs.
That is challenging for you, it seems.
It is. It's very challenging. I'm a Virgo.
In fact, I'm starting to be very concerned about you.
I'm a white, gay Virgo. What the fuck?
Yes.
Put that, your shit back.
In that case, Project 25.
25 what?
No. Do you know what Project 25 is?
No. What is that?
Oh, darling. Let me take this time to ask everybody within the sound of my voice, please look up Project 25.
Project 25, yeah.
Do you know what that is, Skills? Skills, you know yes. What that is? What is it?
Yeah.
It is
the Republican
for taking over the country.
Country, yeah.
And it eliminates all of us.
All of us, yeah.
All of us.
Oh, my God.
Okay. So...
Why are you telling me Project 25?
Because you need to know what problem.
No, yeah, Project.
know what Project 25 is, how close we are to being, for them being able to implement, not only implement that entire agenda, but to make it the law and fundamentally change this country.
But what does that have to do with my answer?
Because it affects everything you say and do and who you are.
Yeah.
The when 25 Project.
Project. What? It is the plan.
Yes, Uncle Kirk. Just
take over of America.
Oh, my God.
And everybody, you see what it is it's the party of white supremacy, the party of white men. It's their agenda for bringing the country back to the era when the party of white men ruled. And so,
I'm seeing something that says Project 2025.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And are you saying that I'm a part of that?
No.
Okay.
No, Kirk. Focus, Kirk.
You need to know about it.
Who's Kirk?
Kirk is Karen.
Oh,
Karen, okay.
Don't call me Kirk. Please call me Kirk. Listen, I know who I am. I'm not
Kurt. Kurt surfs. Kurt is Aunt.
You were just complained for 2 minutes about the shopping cart, and if it was somebody you could tell, you would tell on the individual. That's you, Kurt.
No, I wouldn't tell. In fact, what you know what I do? I confront. I go, could you please put your cart back?
That's a cart. That's a cart.
Confrontation. Do you live in this area? Can you show me your identification?
I would never do that.
That's
right. I would never do that. Do you really think I would do that?
You asked me for my identification.
No, I'm asking mom. Mom?
No.
You think I would do that?
No, but that was a Karen-y thing.
Okay, Karen-y thing, I will admit to. When did I ask you for your identification skills? When did I never asked for your identification.
Excuse me, are you on the show? Do you belong back here? I mean... All right, skills.
Yes,
why are you such an asshole?
Say the question again.
What do you think is more challenging for you than it is for other people you know?
Oh, to go swimming? And I know how to swim?
You don't know how to swim?
I do know how to swim very well.
So I don't understand your answer.
Oh, because... I'm insecure of my chest hairs and swimming without Raymond.
Oh, I have.
And so, but I. Excuse me?
I have pictures of you.
What they got to do?
With your chest exposed.
I might have
to show those.
Oh, you know what?
I've just started to let my chest hairs out over here at the apartment. And I've been getting a little, you know.
A little what?
Just like looks that don't seem like they're scared of it.
A little offers to comb it or something. But I see
no, that. It's just that if you.
Scoot up there. Come on, scoot up, Uncle Upstairs. Come on.
You know what, skills?
Yes.
An electric razor is not that expensive.
Don't light that on fire. That looks like one. That looks like a lighter.
And it could come in handy. But
if you happen to go over here,
where is the nipple? Where you couldn't even see the nipple.
In these shows, in these things, as we travel around the country, I like to go to Black History Museums in the towns I visit whenever possible. And one of my favorite Black History Museums, I believe this is the biggest resource we have to combat the onslaught against teaching comprehensive American history in schools. And the Jim Crow Museum, I think, is a wonderful resource. And if you need information about that era and before and after, and it's just a wonderful resource. And they're expanding. They have so much, so many donations, so much material that they have to expand. They've gone from a small two-room exhibit to now they need a huge building to house all the memorabilia. And it's important to preserve it and curate it and keep it for people to be able to see and understand exactly who we are, how we got here. But when, as I was talking about, we have one party that we've allowed to claim the mantle of real Americans, patriots. And the real Americans that I see are not all of one shade or of one economic bracket. They are, they look like everybody. It's a tapestry, it's a wonderful group of all kinds of people. And the beautiful thing about having Kamala Harris backing up Joe Biden is you have the best person for the job on the brink of receiving the job. And there's not even any question, this woman is ready for this job. And we have a chance to live up to all the principles of real Americans, the real Americans who have worked in this country, who have been interred in this country, who have been marginalized in this country, who have been abused in this country and still stood up for this country, who went to war for this country, who raised families for this country, who paid taxes for this country, who are the real American patriots and cannot allow this faction of staunch racist white supremacists to claim the mantle of real Americans. Real Americans want what's best for all Americans. And what's best for all Americans is that everyone has the opportunity. Not that anyone has an upper hand, but when the best person for the job is a Black woman, then that Black woman gets that job. That's all anybody is asking for. And in this case, if you can't feel confident in the kind of America that represents enough to vote for this clear, all-American, pro-American ticket, then you have a weird idea of what real America. Real American is bully, treasonous, greedy, take at all costs, self-interest, narcissistic. If that's the America you want, then maybe it's time to do some self-reflection. And if that's tempting to you, maybe it's time to do some self-reflection. We have the opportunity to become the country we all think we want to be. People don't want wars. People don't want government doing all kinds of... People want a government of the people, okay? But the people have to tell the government. They don't want that. Governments want wars. And you have the voice, you have the right, you have the opportunity. It should be something you're excited about exercising. You have the opportunity to win, to do something for the country that you want to see. And so that's my rant. Come see me and George in the Philadelphia at the Helium Comedy Club, the July 5th and 6th. Thank you, Skills. You're going to be doing at Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club.
Jimmy. This Friday, 11:30, Show Those Skills, and Sunday and Monday with Lou Nell at 9:30 at Jimmy Kimmel's.
Who is that 11:30 show? Whose show is that?
That's me.
That's your show?
Show Those Skills.
All right. Go see my baby, Show Those Skills. And Steven, you are.
I am really unbooked right now, but I am at Brad Garrett's this week. I'm at Brad Garrett's this week till July 4th, and then I'm going to be at the 7-Eleven asking for change.
Baby, you're going to be here with your wonderful two-minute rants.
Yes.
We can't wait to hear the next one.
I've got a plug for you, Mom.
What?
First Ladies of Disco.
First Ladies of Disco. Yes, we have to talk about it again. It's a wonderful show. Everybody go see it. It makes you happy. It's just wonderful, and I'll be working with them this September with more details to come. Thank you so much. Come back and see us next week where we just get together and hang out, lay back, and chill. Bye-bye.
She got a way, no one can do it like that. Her own style, no one can wear that. Don't you know?